Proverbs 27. We left off last week at verse 13 and 14, and we'll pick up tonight at verse number 15. Verse 15 is not an ideal place to begin. And the reason is it's kind of like moving away from a stoplight with the throttle to the floor. You're going to cause some commotion. And so, yeah, the men are greatly excited about this verse. But in its context, Solomon, of course, again, as the theme has been all the way through, preparing the heart of a prince, instructing a son, and in hopes that he would reign as a good king, reign as a gracious monarch. I believe that was Solomon's intent in putting together these proverbs and teaching them to his son. And of course, you and I have the advantage of hindsight, and we recognize that didn't do much good. The son he is addressing here destroys the kingdom. But nonetheless, that does not mean that what he was taught was wrong. As a matter of fact, if we go back and examine what happened in the life of Rehoboam, it was the fact that he didn't do what he had been instructed that cost him the kingdom. He did not obey the admonition of a father. He did not learn the lessons of wisdom. And as a result, his lack of wisdom, his foolishness, cost him the kingdom, cost the people of God the relationship they should have and could have had with the Lord. And as we look at this, he deals in the rest of this chapter with several areas in which we struggle. And then gives him the simple answer that will bring about success in any of these areas. You're going to find that we're not too much different in that we all have our differences, but we also all have our common struggles. And these are going to be some areas where everybody in the auditorium tonight will struggle, has struggled, is struggling. Because we're all of Adam's race, we struggle in the same areas. Matter of fact, we'll look at that here in just a moment. So may I beg forgiveness of the ladies for just jumping right in there with, machine guns blazing and hand grenades going off. But that happens to be where we were. And we're looking, first of all, at where we struggle. And the first point is about the positions that we occupy. Now, Solomon says here in verse number 15, a continual dropping in a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike. Whosoever hideth her, hideth the wind, and the ointment of his right hand, which bewrayeth itself. Suffice it to say in verse number 16, you can't cover this up. That's what he's saying. If you try to hide a bad character, it doesn't work. Over the years and over the course of a lifetime, particularly in a church as a pastor, and I'm sure this is true wherever you might function in society, there are certain people that look better going than they did coming. When they first approached, when they first came into your life, you thought, wow, this is just wonderful. These are great, fantastic. This is going to... And then a few months or a few years elapse and you think, boy, was I fooled. Boy, was I fooled. The truth of the matter is you can't cover up bad character. You can change it, but it is not easy to change. But if it is not changed, if there are not attempts made and efforts made to change bad character, and you say, what is character? Character is the sum total of the characteristics to which you direct or with which you direct your life. The characteristics in the Word of God, the things God says are the things that ought to be part of my character. If God said it, I ought to oblige. If God said to obey, then I ought to obey. If God said to do, then I ought to do. If God said don't do, then I ought to obey. Those are the things, those characteristics will promote or build in me a good and godly character. Now, if I have a bad character, it can be corrected. But more often than not, rather than correct it, we try to cover it up. And you cannot cover up bad character. It eventually will shine through. And I say again, everybody in this auditorium right now, everybody knows of at least one example of what I just said. Somebody you thought was going to be a real asset, a real help, a real friend, and turned out just to be the opposite. For a while, you were fooled. But then you saw through clearly the facade and you realized, I've been fooled. And the truth of the matter is that's somebody trying to cover up bad character. Now, he deals with a woman, and Solomon certainly had more experience here than any of us have. Solomon celebrated on average 3 anniversaries every day. It's not a matter of just forgetting the day. That would be easy. Every morning when you wake up, you say, this is an anniversary. The question is not what day, but who. Who gets the presents today? Who is it? And, of course, Solomon had been commanded not to indulge himself in the number of wives that he had taken. That was not fitting for a king nor for anyone. And yet he had followed the ways of the kings and kingdoms round about him and built him this lavish harem. And as a result of it, he learned a lot. He knew a lot. But he did not learn it the easy way, and probably learned a lot of things it would have been better off, or he would have been better off never to have had to learn. But one of the things he learned about position is that it's difficult to fit in the position that you have placed yourself in or taken upon you. It doesn't matter tonight what your position might be. Everybody has a position somewhere. You may be a father, you may be a mother, you may be a teenage son or daughter, you may be a little rascal. You have those positions. You may be courting some gal or some guy. You've got a position or a role that you're trying to fill. And the truth of the matter is it's not easy no matter what that role is you're trying to fill. We always tend to look at the other person with the other role, and here's what we say. Well, if I could do what they do. Did you ever say that? Well, if I could be what they are, if I had that job, but the truth of the matter is the guy that's got that job's looking at somebody else going, if I had that job. There is that discontentment that comes with any position we fill simply because no position is easy for us to fill. Can I tell you why? Us. So the fellow said, we have met the enemy and he is us. I think it was Commodore Perry from Perrysburg who said, we have met the enemy and he is ours. He was the last guy to say that. We can honestly say we have met the enemy. We looked at him in the mirror. There is no position that we have to fill that carries with it responsibility that is easy. I know this, if you're a wife tonight, you tend to think, well, if I could do what my husband does. And I'll guarantee you, every husband here has at one time or another today thought, if I could do what somebody else does. Every kid thinks, well, you just wait till I grow up. If I could be like those people that don't have to go to school. Some of you kids thought that today. Happiness is always somewhere out there in the future. But the truth of the matter is, it's not the happiness that we're lured by as much as it is our own dissatisfaction at our failure to fill the role that God's given us to fill at this particular moment. Roles change throughout the course of a life. I am pleased to tell you young people that your role is going to change. You are no longer going to have to obey everything your mother and father says. One of these days, you will be able to come and go at will. You will be able to stay as long as you want to stay. You can come in whenever you want to come in. As long as it doesn't interfere with your job and with your other obligations that you're going to pick up along the way. One of the great revelations of my heart was over the years when I realized that it wasn't about choosing to obey or not to obey. It was about choosing who I got to obey. Amen. What do you mean by that? I mean, find a good boss, because you're going to have to do what he says. When you're out looking for a job, find a good boss. Find a good company to work for. Why? Because you're going to have to abide by their rules. Find the things that will be conducive to you filling that role to the best of your ability, because the role doesn't get any easier. It is a difficult thing to fulfill the roles. And for a husband here, Solomon says, here's a tough thing to do. It's tough to be at home with mama when mama's not happy. Now, we could spend all day arguing, but you would lose if you were the mindset that we're all just the same. That's one of the foolish notions that comes out of intelligentsia, which use the word intelligentsia to cover up their stupidity. There's no two people in this auditorium alike. We're all different. We all have different strengths. We all have different weaknesses. We all have different abilities. And the idea that, well, everybody's equal doesn't work that way. I wish it did. I think that people like me should be able to play quarterback for an NFL football team at a $27 million a year contract. How about you? But they won't let me play. I don't understand that. I'm as smart, at least in my own mind. The truth of the matter is, you've got to realize, let me tell you this, God dealt you whatever it is you've got in life. And you're going to find a whole lot of people that God dealt a whole lot more than you did. Say, I don't like that. Then pooch out your lip and whine about it. But you're not going to change it. There are going to be people that are smarter than you. There are going to be people who can run faster than you and jump higher than you. There are going to be people who can do things that you will never be able to do. If you don't like it, lump it. That's life, pal. But let me say this. There are also going to be a lot of people that would love to be able to do what you could do. There are going to be people that would use you as a model. Would say, boy, I want to be like them. I want to be able to achieve what they've achieved. And this idea that, well, we're all the same. Aren't you glad we're not all the same? Don't you enjoy diversity? I'm glad that God made elm trees and oak trees and weeping willows and all those trees. I'm glad for that diversity. What a miserable world it would be if everything was an oak tree. But God created that. And no two of us, matter of fact, no two oak trees are the same. God created diversity within diversity. But that diversity very often causes conflicts. Because we are not the same, now this is going to be profound, I want you to write this down. Because we are not the same, we are not always the same. Okay? I know that's Rick Sowell's philosophy there, that'll work well. We're going to be at odds. And you know what Solomon said? He said, son, I've had some bad days in my life. Let me tell you about one of the worst days I ever had. He says, as a continual dropping in a very rainy day, contentious woman is just that. In other words, what am I saying? Well, if it's pouring the rain outside, you wake up this morning and you were ready to play golf or whatever it is that you do, and you had your golf clubs all shined up and ready to go sitting by the door, and you're ready to go at it, you're just anxious to go, and you open the door, and I mean it's just one of those torrentials. Just pouring. And you realize, ain't going to happen. Now that'll dash your spirits, because you can't go outside. But then you turn around, and mama ain't happy. Now then you're trapped. You can't go outside, you can't stay inside. There is no happiness to be found. That's what Solomon is saying. There are days where fulfilling your responsibility as a father, as a husband, is almost impossible. There are days when you just as soon die as you had faced some of the responsibilities you have to face. And people that you interact with can make it even worse, as in this case, a contentious woman. Ladies, for your benefit, you might just substitute a lazy husband. I thought I'd at least get one amen out of that, but I understand sometimes it's hard to fulfill the role that God has given me because sometimes other people don't measure up to what I think they ought to be. Sometimes other people make it more difficult. They take a bad situation and make it worse. Parents, disobedient children make it a lot harder to be a fair parent. Wives, contentious wives make it harder to be a husband. Husbands, lazy men make it harder to be a good wife. You say, well, I think we ought to just all have the same role. Though that would work. I think we ought to all get in the intersection and direct traffic. But if we did, who'd be driving? There is of necessity different responsibilities that go with the different roles that we have. Being content in that role to a great degree involves being able to say, in some measure, I have been successful. But very often we struggle with the positions that God has given us. People say, well, you know, I think that men get all the rights and women in the marriages don't get any rights. And the truth of the matter is that's not so. Because if it were so that being the man was the best job, why is it they do such a lousy job at it? It is as hard to be a leader as it is to be a follower in any case. There are difficulties with whatever position that we have in life. Here's a young man at the feet of his father who is going to become the king. And as the king, he's going to get all the perks. You might say, boy, I wish I could do that. I'd like to. If you looked only at the perks, who wouldn't want to be a king? Now let me tell you something about this king. This king is situate between the Assyrians and the Egyptians and the up-and-coming Babylonian armies, which are three of the mightiest powers on the face of the earth. How does that help you sleep at night? Let me give this one to you. Here is a man who is the head of an empire that is alone in its existence as an empire that honors only one God and Him alone. A monotheistic society that loves the Lord God and honors His word to the disdain of every pagan group that lives around them. Let me put this one on you. Here's a king that, if God so allows, could very easily be the lord of a land that would go through 14 years of famine. Or 7 years of famine. Or 10 years of famine. Here is a king that could easily preside over a land when the waters did not come for 3.5 years. Is it changing your attitude a little bit? There are always responsibilities and there are always difficulties to offset the perks. The struggle we have is with the position and fulfilling the role that God's given us to fulfill. If you're a Sunday school teacher, can I tell you what you struggle with? You struggle with being a good Sunday school teacher. Oftentimes, it results in somebody saying this, well, if I had that class over there, they're much better behaved than mine. Well, if I could teach that age, girls or boys, if I could teach that group right there, it would be so much easier because everybody knows they're not yours, and as a result of their not being yours, they're the bright spot. Truth of the matter is, that Sunday school teacher who teaches that age group has the same struggles you have, and probably more. It's a matter of fulfilling the position, the role that God gave us to fill. It is a difficult thing. Why? Because people don't seem to make it easy on us. A fellow said one time, the perfect church is the church that has no members. Amen? It would be perfectly empty. It would be perfectly quiet. It would be perfectly obedient. It would be perfectly responsive to the preacher's preaching. If nobody was in the pews, they could call him on Monday and say, how was the group yesterday? He'd say, man, perfect altar call. Everybody in the house came to the altar. The problem is, it's people that make our positions difficult. Ladies, next time you are ready to unload on Dodo, the next time you're about ready to tell him how much better off you'd be had you married another man, take a minute, look in the mirror, and ask yourself how much better off he'd have been if he'd have married another woman. Well, I didn't get much response there. See, the truth of the matter is, we do a whole lot to complicate the positions that others have to fill? You know, if it weren't for speeders, we wouldn't need traffic cops. But it's those same speeders that complicate the lives of a traffic cop. If we didn't have speeders, he could sit there and drink coffee and eat donuts. So when a speeder goes by, he gets irritated. Well, that's your job. Sometimes difficulties are the reason you have the position that you have. We struggle with relationships because of the positions that we have. Sometimes, dads, it's easier to be a pal than it is to be a father. Sometimes it's easier to be a pushover than it is to be an adult and lead the way. Sometimes it's easier to say okay than to say no. And we struggle with those things. We struggle with them. Sometimes it's easier to give in than it is to say, you know what, this is the way I see it. I see it this way, I can't see it any other way, and I have to walk by the dictates of my own conscience. Sometimes it's easier just to say, whatever, and to cave. Solomon said to his son, you know what, you're going to have a problem, son. You're going to have a problem in your life because you're going to marry a wife. And wives are trouble. Now, had he been addressing the princess, he would have said, sweetheart, you're going to have problems in life because you're going to marry a man. You see, it's not just something that one gender or one group of people endure. It's something that all of us who have any position at all struggle with. And that is that there are responsibilities associated with that position. Several other times he says it again. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 13. He said, a foolish son is the calamity of his father, and the contentions of a wife are a continual dropping. It's not just a wife that makes it hard to be a good husband. It's a son that makes it hard to be a good father. Truth of the matter is, you'd be a perfect husband if you didn't have a wife. You say, I find that hard to believe. When that gal married you, she thought you'd be a perfect husband. It'd be easy to be a perfect father if you didn't have any children. They just have a way of messing things up. That's the part that we have dealing with position. He said in Proverbs 21, verse 9, it is better to dwell in a corner of a housetop than with a brawling woman in a wide house. Some of the New Southern versions render that than with a brawling woman in a double wide. Do you ever notice how uncomfortable it gets when the friction is turned up? I have taught for years the different roles that we have as husbands and wives. And they come down to us really, less than 1% of knowledge is ever available in a college setting. The greatest knowledge available is out there with people. Live life. The greatest teachers you'll ever find are people who have lived life. They can tell you more in a heartbeat. And sometimes the truth of the matter is that this friction occurs as a result of who we are and what we do and the roles we have. If you've been through my premarital classes, many of you have gotten married around here, one of the things I teach you is where the words of your position come from. The word husband is a Nordic term. And it comes from two words, house band. And it is significant because it signifies holding things together. Closest thing here tonight would be the belt you guys have around your waist. That's holding some things in there. That's a house band. Or maybe a double wide, as the case might be. The role of a husband is traditionally always one of strength, protection, provision, taking care of the things that are broken, fixing them, making them work again, holding life together for the family. You say, I don't like that. Well, then do it your own way and get divorced 8 or 9 times, because that's, as a rule, what happens. The position is one of strength. You say, well, I'm not very strong. Then you better learn some lessons, because you're going to have to fill a position someday that is going to require that of you. If you're the guy, when tragedy occurs, begins to weep and scream and cry like a 3-year-old, you probably ought to stay single. Do us all a good, you know, a favor. It's not an easy thing to fill that role of the house band. When you come home, she's going to expect you to fix it if it's broken, to catch it if it's loose, to chase it out of the house if it's scaring her. You say, that's just unfair. No, that's the position that you have. If something goes bump in the night, she's going to expect you to get up and go see what it was. You can say, sweetheart, there's a double-barreled shotgun up there. You just think I'd go check it out. She expects certain things of you. Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to say, well, that's just the mores of the bygone era, and that's just the prejudices. And okay, impress us. Of all the people just like you, how many of you know that have successful marriages? I resolved in my life at 17 never to listen to a failure tell me how to do something they had never succeeded at. Didn't matter to me whether they had tenure. Make it work. Show me how it works, and I'll listen. The word wife comes from the word that means to weave. In Middle Eastern cultures, very often the success of a woman was dependent upon something she began as a young lady and usually did not complete until she was well up in years. Very often it was a tapestry or a rug, sometimes 20 feet long and 14 feet wide. And she would do it by hand over the course of a lifetime. She would dye the threads of wool and make them the colors they ought to be. She would put together the design. And those rugs to this day sell in London from anywhere from $80,000 to $200,000. So before you make fun of her, you tell me what you're worth. A lifetime. She's a weaver. What does that mean? I have said over the years that a woman is responsible for the color of her home. The brightness. The vibrance. The draw. The comfort of her home. Ladies, if your husband has the best day of his life at work, they promote him to CEO with his own parking space in which to park his new BMW. They triple his salary. On the way home, he finds a lottery ticket. It is the winning lottery ticket for $16 million. And he walks through the door and is met by his angry wife, who is upset about 3 dozen things. It is not going to continue being a good day. She has that much power. She portrays and paints the beauty of her home. Most guys will admit that if it was left up to us, we'd have a picture of an elk or a deer or a moose or a head of one of those animals. Maybe a NASCAR picture or a muscle car poster. Don't need frames. Matting, don't need it. You don't need a toilet paper holder. No purpose. You need a magazine rack and a shotgun rack in the bathroom. Men are crude. But no man fails to appreciate a wife who can take colors and mix them together and put them together and say, wow, this looks really nice. He comes home and he sees the little picture of the vase of flowers and the little kitten sitting next to it. And his first response is, "What will the guys think?" But he likes it. But he likes it. Conversely, if your husband has the absolute worst day of his life, he is fired from his job, and as he walks out to get in his car, someone runs into his car from the back end and pins him against the curb, breaking both of his legs. In the course of which he loses his wallet and somebody runs up $100,000 in charges on his credit cards before he can get to the ATM. If he comes home and he's met at the door by a loving, kind-hearted, tender wife, it doesn't matter what happened through the course of the day. She has the ability to paint the beauty of a home. I'll give it to you this way. The husband is the frame. By the way, you can spend as much on a frame as you can on a picture. Because a frame has a way of holding it all together. But it is the ladies that have the ability to dip the colors, to turn the brushes and to move them and to put those things that make a frame worth having. They're not complete without the other. If you went home today, and you might, if it were just a guy, see hanging on the wall a frame in which was nothing. And he'd say, "I got a good deal on it." You'd go, "Doesn't work." Or if you went home with someone today and in their beautiful living room with well-upholstered furniture and there was just a picture hanging on the wall with no frame, just a piece of canvas, you'd say, "You really ought to get a frame." They need each other. And the strength to hold it all together requires also someone to paint the beauty of the picture. Now that's a good marriage. A good marriage is not a guy trying to paint a picture. It doesn't work. I mean, don't ask me about colors. Color swatches. You go to the store and you say, "I'd like some blue paint." "Yes, and what color blue would you like?" "Yes, blue. Blue paint, yes." "You want dark blue or light blue?" "Well, I guess maybe a light blue. "Well, do you want a lilac or a what?" "I want blue paint." Men short circuit when given too many options. We don't work well with options. That's why a waitress will drive you nuts in a restaurant. "You want toast? You want whole wheat? You want rye? You want regular? You want biscuits? You want banana nut roll? Just bring me some bread. You want coffee? Yeah. You want cream? Sugar? You want..." Just do it. Put it on the table. Tell me to shut up and eat. I'll be much happier than having all the decisions I have to make. I need somebody else to paint the picture. Now, if one of the patrons gets unruly with the waitress and tells her, "I'll step in to take care of it." Not a problem. I have more trouble trying to figure out whether I want whole wheat or banana nut bread as I would have trying to take a gun out of a robber's hand. One terrifies me. The gun really doesn't bother me. We struggle in our positions. He says to his son, "Listen, you're going to have trouble in your life." Why? Because you're going to get married. You're going to marry a woman, and women are trouble. He would have said the same thing to a daughter about a husband. He would have said the same thing to a teenager about its parents or its parents about a teenager. Why? It's the matter of position that is difficult in life. And none of us are happy in the position we have unless we strive for a godly contentment. You very rarely get more out of a position than you put into it. Somebody said life is give and take, and for the most part it's give. Especially when you're in a position trying to fulfill the requirements of that position. Very often, if we're not careful, we forget that our attitude toward the position God's given us will not only make us unhappy, it will make those around us unhappy. whether it be being a boss in a business, or a wife, or a husband, or a teenagers. Do you realize sometimes the way you act as teenagers make us want to kill teenagers? I promise you that if you've been a teenager for more than 2 years, your parents at some point have questioned why they ever had children. You say, oh no, they... No, no. You're a real strain sometimes. You say, well, I thought it was, you know, it was my parents, you know, I just don't like being a... As much as you dislike being a teenager, sometimes your parents dislike being the parent of a teenager. As much as you dislike being a wife, sometimes your husband dislikes being a husband. Lady met her husband at the door the other day and said to him, I want to ask you a question. She was holding a slip of paper in her hand. She said, what would you do if I won the lottery? He said, honestly? She said, yeah, clutching a piece of paper. He said, I'd divorce you and sue you for half. I'd let you keep the house, but I'd get half of what you won. She said, good, I won $12. Here's $6. Get out of the house. We always look at the other person as the one with the problem. We very rarely realize that we're probably the greatest contributor to that problem. When that other person struggles to fulfill their role, it makes it difficult for you to fulfill their role. Husbands who are not the leaders, who are not the house band, who are not the ones that take care of it and make sure it's fixed and make sure it's right and make sure it gets done, they're the ones that women have a hard time trusting. We tend to move as parallel walls pushing on each other. Very often the bad attitude that develops when we become contentious or lazy is first of all monotonous. Monotonous in the sense that it's just a continual dripping. Again and again and again, the same problem, the same situation, the same circumstances, over and over and over and over again. You can't run outside. It's raining out there. You can't stay in the house. It's just raining in the house. There is no place of comfort. It is monotonous. Not only that, but a bad attitude in the position that I feel is corrosive. Best way to ruin a good day for somebody is to let your feelings all hang out. Many a wife has ruined a good day for a husband, and many a husband has ruined a good day for a wife. Because just like pouring acid, it just ate away whatever good thing there was that had happened in the day today. But probably the hardest part about that bad attitude that fills our relationships is the fact that it's inflexible. It won't change. You can't fix it. Usually before there is that explosive eruption of Mount St. Helens in your living room, there is a time to count down, but once she blows, there's not much fixing it. We just have to pick up the pieces. He says here that living in a household with a woman is going to be trouble. Living in a household with a man is going to be trouble. Why? Because if we don't fulfill the responsibilities of the position we occupy, we make life miserable for the other people around us. There is a second area in this. Verse number 17, he says here, iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. Whoso keepeth the fig tree shall eat the fruit thereof. So he that waiteth on his master shall be honored. As in water face answereth to face, so the heart of man to man. Not only do we struggle in our position, we struggle with our pals. Now, I realize friends would have been a better word, but didn't start with a P. And I'm trying to be homiletical. We struggle not only with our relationships at home, we struggle with relationships with other people. Men struggle with relationships because they very rarely have any. 95% of men polled just several years ago involved men and simply asked them, do you have a friend you would consider to be a best friend? 95% said no and said that they had never had what they would consider a best friend. We have that aloofness that says, I don't need anybody. But the truth of the matter is we do need each other. One of the great things here that the guys do is come and pray on Saturday morning. And the great thing about it is the ability to kneel next to someone else who humbly calls unto the Lord, and you find out they struggle with the same things you're struggling with. Their heart is where your heart is. It is a fascinating thing just to realize we're not as different as we thought we were. We are not independent, we are interdependent. And sometimes we struggle, we say, I don't need anybody, but you do. Iron sharpens iron. Iron without the prospect of a sharpening agent will go dull. It will cease to be useful and functional. It will at some point become worthless. It will not be what it was designed to be, nor fulfill the role that it should have fulfilled. You do not have to get old when you get old. You do not have to wear out when you get old. You can stay sharp, you can stay keen, but it will require the input of a friend. Ladies as well have to be cautious with their pals. Ladies very often are looking for someone that they can help. Someone they can contribute to. Someone that's that mother instinct. And as a result, we invite every stray puppy with every known mange and disease they have character-wise into our lives, not realizing that that affects us. For men, it would be a good idea for you to get some friends. For ladies, it would be a good idea for you to evaluate what you really have. Has this friend been a good influence in my life? Has this friend been helpful to my walk with the Lord? Has this friend been helpful in my relationships as a wife, as a mother, whatever that role I fulfill is? Has this person sharpened me, ladies? Then I don't need that friend. Ah, but alas, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Well, then you'll destroy your own existence. The truth of the matter is, every man needs a friend to sharpen his countenance. Men are not talkative by nature, and I am no different, although you may find that hard to believe. I just soon sit at home with a remote. My wife, as a matter of fact, if you've talked to me on the phone, you will realize very quickly, I am not a phone person. Do not call me if you want to have a phone conversation. I am not interested. I have preachers on a weekly basis call and tell me, you are hard to get on your cell phone. My answer to that is, yeah, get the message. I am not going to be ruled by a cell phone. Some of you cannot live life without texting or talking to somebody on the phone. Get a life. Bonanza is better on TV. We have to text. We have to call. We have to see. People texting during church now. I I don't need to bark there. I believe you're going to pay to a holy God. He said, be still and know that I am God. Some of you would not give the President of the United States the same lack of respect you give to God. Well, I know your life's important. Yeah, none of the rest of us have important lives. I'm glad that yours is really important. Probably so important you'll cross the center line someday and hit somebody head on like a drunk and take somebody else's life. But you learned it in church, all right? I don't know where that came from. That was good. I should put that in my notes in case I ever teach this again. We need to recognize that we struggle with our pals. We need to understand that a true friend is not somebody that covers for me. A true friend is not somebody that provides me with an alibi. A true friend is not always one who commiserates with me and takes my side. Iron sharpens iron. It is the friction that sharpens. Let me ask you a question. Who do you have in your life that you can disagree with and have an argument of sorts and never jeopardize your friendship? Then that'll tell you how many friends you really have. Somebody who can get in your face and say, listen, that stinks. That's a terrible characteristic. You need to change that about yourself. You need to alter that in your life and you not get... Friends, sharpening. Iron sharpens iron. The idea of struggling with our pals. We struggle not only with our position, with our pals, but with our passions. With our passions. We are very often led by our passions, by our desires, by our wants. By those things that we long for. We are never satisfied. It appears that continually we are looking and longing. That's the course of life. The Lord reminded us, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. All that are in the world, the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, the pride of life, they're there looming over us continually. And we struggle with our passions. 90% of the problems our nation is dealing with today are a result of unbridled passions. I don't know what they teach in school anymore. I probably would be shocked if I attended. But when I went to school, kindergarten, first and second grade had one objective in mind. Sit down, shut your mouth, do what you're told, or I'll hit you with a board. How many of you remind you got whacked at least once coming through school? Keep them up just for a minute. Hold them up. Look at that. Isn't it terrible? The world just destroyed every one of you. You say, well, that's abusive. You know, sometimes you have to abuse people so you can teach them something. You know what the doctor does every once in a while? He sticks needles in people. For crying out loud, how abusive can that be? I went in the other day, he had a little hammer, and he hit me on the knee with it. He wrapped this thing around my arm and liked to cut the circulation off in my arm. He stuck a stick down my throat and put a gun barrel in my ear. You know why you're laughing? You don't consider that abuse. Because it nets a higher good. Now, I don't know about your character, but I know mine. If in kindergarten, first and second grade, they hadn't taught me to sit still, shut your mouth, and listen, or I'll hit you with a board, by the time I got to high school, I'd have burnt the building down. Listen, if the Lord hadn't saved me and given me a Bible, I'd have become a cult leader. If the Lord hadn't taken care of my education, I'd have become a mastermind for somebody. Taught them how to rob things and steal. And you say, why? Because I'm just a lousy person. I understand tonight I'm preaching to the pristine people who have never had a character flaw. You just would have been the nice people, you know, with or without an education. You'd have been wonderful people. And, you know, like people in third world countries where they don't have an education system, they all are such wonderful people. The truth of the matter is the nature of man is corruption. The nature of man is sin. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Left to ourselves, we don't come out of sin. We go deeper and deeper and deeper, and we become more and more perverse in our nature. If someone, something in the course of life doesn't get hold of us and arrest us, we'll go to hell sure as the world. The grace and love of the Lord Jesus Christ is an arresting factor. It stopped me from my downhill incline. He brought me up out of the horrible pit and out of the miry clay. He's the one. Without Him, I'd be on my way to hell. I struggle with passions, and you do too. What I want, what I desire, very often becomes the controlling factor in my life. We struggle in life. A prince will struggle if he does not control his passions. He says, hell and destruction are never full, so the eyes of a man. The eyes of a man, that's the problem, are never satisfied. I don't know what it is you want, but whatever it is, if you had it tonight before you left the building, you'd want something else in the morning. Truth of the matter, everybody here has bought something at one time you desperately had to have. It was a benchmark in your happiness. And it's home now, dusting or rusting in a closet. Long ago replaced by something else that you had to have because you saw it. I sometimes struggle with the mentality of Americans just by watching the television. But wait. Now, for a selected time, you can get two. And so, wow, if we get two, I'll buy them, you know. Just pay separate postage and handling, which happens to be $24.17 for the $9.95 thing you're buying. How many of you know people are in business to make money? And sometimes the best way to make money is to make fools first. And then you can make some money from the fools. We struggle with what we want. They always make it look better than it looks. The new car smell goes away in a week. A shopping cart hits it in the door. The first payment comes due. And all at once, I wish I had another new car. We got in the situation in America because people wanted something and they were told they could have it because all they had to do was pay the minimum monthly payment. And then they were happy for a week, and then they decided they didn't get the bigger model or the deluxe model, and they should have gotten that. So they sold the other one on eBay for half what they paid for it. And I mean, after all, they still have it on their charge card. And then they went and charged another one, got the bigger deluxe model. And so for the next 35 years, they're paying payments on that. And all at once, they wonder why they're losing their home or why they can't afford to pay their bills. I'll tell you why. You let your passions get out of control. I want it. I want it. I want it. And then when they come and they start to kick you out of your house or your job, or I don't want it. I don't want it. I don't want it. Make up your mind. The control of passions. We ought to be people who control our position. Do not struggle with the position God gave us. We learn to be godly and content in that position, and we strive to be what God wants us to be. We ought to be people who can overcome the difficulty that we have in our friendships or in our pals, the difficulty we have in passions, and then the difficulty that comes with praise. This is kind of a turn, but it works well for a young prince, and it works well for a lot of people. As the fining pot, verse 21, as the fining pot for silver and the furnace for gold, so is a man to his praise. Can I tell you what else we struggle with? We struggle with our praise. We struggle with our praise. What in the world do you mean by that, preacher? You want to know the real acid test of an individual? Brag about them. You want to see character? Put somebody in an extreme situation. When people start to brag, when people start to say, oh, well, you know, this guy is, I'll tell you, he's a wonderful, great, fine individual, all at once, you'll find then where your measure of your character is. The truth of the matter is that most people can't handle praise, but we like to get it. We spend our lives longing for it, looking for it, hoping to have it, and then when we get it, it reveals things to us and about us we don't really like. Somebody said concerning praise, the vain seek it, weak men are inflated by it, wise men disregard it completely. But boy, it's hard to disregard praise. So when somebody's fishing, they're going to use praise. They're going to use praise. Every successful sales tactic you'll find, doesn't matter who you take, bring in somebody to speak to your sales force on making the sale, closing the deal, I will guarantee you they will begin with what we call the buttering up stage. Brag on them a little bit. Why? Because people can't handle it. They get lifted up in pride. They long to have praise. And the more praise they get, the more they want. But the truth of the matter is, when you put silver in the fining pot, what happens is all the impurities come to the top. When you put gold there and begin to refine gold, the process of refining gold is a melting process. And during that melting process, all the impurities come to the surface. And very often, when somebody puts us in an environment of continual praise and buttering up, and how many of you have teenage daughters? Then you know what the buttering up process is all about. Oh, Dad. You're such a good dad. No, 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 don't ask. Oh, but Dad. No, no, go away, no. We struggle with praise. When's the last time you asked the Lord to help you not to get any praise? We struggle with it because we don't get it when we think we should, and we struggle with it because when we do get it, it goes to our head and we think ourselves better than everybody else. Someone said that praise is a direct link to the ego. If you want to mess with somebody's ego, use praise. I try to the best of my ability not to praise people from the pulpit. You say that's cruel and mean. I think we ought to thank people. We try to thank people, but inevitably if I thank 12 people, I'll forget the 13th one. And then the character comes out. See? 10 minutes ago, I just was thanking the Lord for the opportunity to be a humble servant. And now, I can't believe they didn't even mention my name. Everybody knows I do most of that. Everybody knows it wouldn't work without me. It would have fallen apart. And now, you know what happens? We start refining. And all of the garbage comes to the top. But the same thing's true when you praise. Praise or lack of praise. We struggle with praise. We get too much praise and all at once we look around and start looking down our long nose, which has become rather Pinocchio-ish. To coin a word. And as it becomes Pinocchio-ish and it begins to protrude even further, we look down our long nose at other people and we say, I just don't understand why people just don't want to pitch in and work. You know, if they could just all be humble and faithful servants like I am. You know what he said here? He said, you want to see your man's real character? Give him some praise. So is a man to his praise. Though thou shouldest bray a fool in mortar among wheat with a pestle, yet will not his foolishness depart from him. Some things are too close to separate. The Bible said that if we take care of a child, the rod of correction will drive foolishness from him. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. I believe in discipline. I don't believe in beating children. See, that's an intellectual that never raised children that want to tell you what's going on. I believe in disciplining children. I believe that somebody has to take control of the life of a child. And once they take control of the life of a child, they have the ability to direct the life of the child. And if they direct the life of the child toward good things, at some point you can take your hands completely off and they'll keep going the course you've set for them. You say, well, I have a better philosophy. Then let's see how many of your kids are up in the penitentiary. How many of them bust up their marriages? How many of them go to jail? Let's just see how yours work. I believe in disciplining a child. I believe in causing. Why? Because foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. I wish I could go back to school. Did it blow your mind? Wow. Anybody volunteer for that? No? Wow. I have 2 bachelor's degrees and a doctorate. You know what I'd like to do? I'd like to go back to school. You know why? Because I never had an appreciation for learning while I was in school. I was always a guy sitting in school looking out the window, wishing I was out there. I was always the guy causing havoc in the classroom. Now I wish I could go back and learn those things. I have an appreciation for learning and knowledge because now I've learned what it is and what it can do and also what it cannot do and what it is not. We need to be people who are cautious of praise in our lives. And then let me say this, and we'll close tonight. Here's how you get that. You want to live life? You live life, it's full of surprises, it's full of disappointments. It's going to be a disappointment, number one, because someone's going to give you a position or a role that you will be expected to fill. Can I tell you something about it right now? You won't like it. You won't like it. You'll say, well, it's my intent to change the world. Yeah, but if you change the world, you're going to give you another position. And can I tell you something about it? You won't like it. I think we should just reverse the roles. Okay, reverse the roles. Let me tell you something about your new position. You won't like it. We struggle with the responsibilities of the positions that we're given in life. We struggle with our pals. How to make friends, how to keep friends. What's the essence of a real biblical friendship? We struggle with passions. How do I control those wants and desires and keep them in check? We struggle with praise. How do I keep it from affecting me? How do I keep it from making me the wrong kind of person? How do I keep it from infecting me? There's a struggle in life. How do you deal with it? I'm glad you asked. Verse 23, be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks and look well to thy herds. For riches are not forever, and doth the crown endure to every generation? The hay appeareth, the tender grass showeth itself, and herbs of the mountain are gathered. The lambs are for thy clothing, and the goats are the price of the field. And thou shalt have goat's milk enough to buy, or thou shalt have goat's milk enough for thy food, for the food of thy household, and for the maintenance of thy maidens. You say, what in the world are you talking about? That's the answer. How in the world do you take care of these problems that come with the life that I live? Do you ever wonder why you never got the victory over reading your Bible? Some of you have read your Bible every day this year so far. Let me tell you something. You could quit today. You could quit today and just stop. Some of you have tried to be a better witness. And you know what? Some of you are frustrated enough that you could just quit right now. Some of you could quit church and never come again because you're frustrated. And you came to church because you thought, if I come enough, at some point, it's going to smooth out. Sorry. Life at best is a struggle. That newborn infant comes into the world fighting for everything it's worth. Coughing and sputtering and screaming and choking. And you'll go out the same way. What makes you think it's going to be any different between the cradle and the grave? Life's tough. Well, where's the answer, preacher? I'm telling you what the answer is. It's right here. It's as plain as day. Don't you see it? It's called diligence or persistence. Be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks and look well to thy herds. Number one, keep your mind and your heart on you and your walk with the Lord. You and your position God gave you to fill. You and the things that concern you. And quit looking around here at everybody else trying to decide why I'm not like them or how I could be more like them. The rule tonight is not to put your head on the pillow and say, God, thank you that I'm not like other men. That's what the Pharisee prayed. The rule tonight is not to be able to put my head on the pillow and say, God, I'm as good as many of men and many of women and better than some and not as good as some, but God, I'm doing pretty good, comparatively speaking, because Paul said, they that compare themselves among themselves are not wise. The rule of thumb tonight is to put your head on the pillow and say, thank you, God, for what you made me. I don't have the talents that a lot of people have. I have more talents than some people have. But Lord, today I have used what talents you have given me, what abilities you have given me. To the best of my ability, I have served you with what you've given me today. And I may not be as good as the people across the hall or across the aisle or around the world. But God, today you know my heart. And I have loved you and served you today with all I have. Diligence. Diligence. Let's bow our heads.